Good evening. I would like to welcome you to the February 5th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members. Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne will be a few minutes late. Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you. We have, on your agenda, you have proclamation about African American History Month. That's going to get moved, as Henry will move later, in the form of a resolution. So that's going to get moved off the top here. I also would like to ask for an executive session to discuss real estate negotiations at the end of our meeting, and I won't expect to take any action afterwards. So we have public privilege of the floor. I have a few people signed up. Sheets are in the back if anybody would like to also sign up. By signing this, you agree to the following. I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. First, I have Paul Rossi and then James Murphy.
I promise not to incite any riots tonight. Representing the Ithaca Board of Realtors, just wanted to remind you all of the event this Thursday, 6 to 8, Thursday night at the space at Green Star. Yes, in my backyard, about local real estate issues. Again, this Thursday night at the space at Green Star from 6 to 8. And look forward to seeing any of you who are available. I know you're all busy, but thank you for allowing me this time.
Thank you very much, Paul. And the first event was great. So Jim Murphy and then Margaret O'Neill.
Hi, it's good to be here. I want to thank you for passing the legislation on Veterans Counselor. I know a lot of people probably got feedback saying we don't need it, but I really think we really do need it. We have an informal network of veterans. I'm a Vietnam veteran. And in our veterans network, we have mostly Vietnam, but we also have Desert Storm, and we have Iraq and Afghanistan. Our informal network really generally starts over at Loaves and Fishes with J.R. Claiborne, a Navy vet, and with Christina Culver, the director. And when they discover a veteran, they basically get a hold of me. And not because I can do anything special. I basically just connect and eat lunch with guys periodically to make sure that they're being heard. But you have some wonderful people here that we can use. Brad Bennett, who's also a Navy vet, the Challenge Workforce, has been really effective at finding employment for people who generally are going to be underemployed or unemployed. Tammy Baker is the person that picks up the people and makes sure they get through the DSS process. We have a lot of counselors around here. We have Freeville. We have John Canistero, who is really, really very remarkable, but he's available once a week. So anyhow, I just want to shout out JR and Christina for the work they do. Okay, the new counselor has got to see this as more than a desk job, a paperwork job. Nothing against the counselors that are generally through the VA and stuff, but for the most part, it's like sit down, let's talk, I take notes, but that isn't what we need. We need someone who can talk to vets, somebody who has that experience. So you're looking for a caring person, a vet that can reach out, more than a desk and a paperwork job. You can eat lunch at Lowe's occasionally. You're going to find that there's five or six vets there on a regular basis, two of whom have did make it through basic training but are very much hurting, and they just need to have the company. You need to reach into the black community. I've got buddies, Ralph, Ray, Ross. They're good, they're present, and they're in good positions. But I think in Tompkins County, it's safe to say there's 500 to 600 black veterans. They're just not seen. I don't know. They could be fine. But over 500 veterans. And with that, that's where you have to have someone who gets out behind the desk. Let's start identifying who's out there. I want people to stop by and say Jim McConkie out in Enfield. He's 96. He's a World War II hero. They need to go by and say hi to him. Make sure he's okay. They got to get out of the office. We have Warrior Writers and Combat Paper run by Iraq vets here. Both therapeutic programs that go to places like Walter Reed. You've got John Canistero I mentioned. D.A. Van Houten is a West Point grad. We have a deal with him now. He gets a hold of Kenna Murphy with addiction and nonviolent crime within the VA up in Syracuse. And Matt has been able to get people that would be going to jail into treatment in the VA. That a veteran deserves that. And, again, PTSD, this person has got to be moving towards non-medicated therapies and things like that. We've got to get off the drugs. The VA has finally seen the light. Okay,
thank you,
I guess
Jim.
That's...
Is that written notes? If we could have that, it'd be very helpful.
Well, it's pretty sloppy, but you can have it.
We can do sloppy.
Okay. We can take sloppy, that's
okay.
Right.
All right.
All right. Thanks so much, Jim. Appreciate it, and thanks for coming back. Margaret O'Neill and then Faye Gugakis.
A little too tall. Hi, I'm Margaret O'Neill. I'm part of the informal network that Jim was talking about. I'm a veteran, and I understand that government works at a very, very fast pace. It most of the time outpaces a snail. But I would like to point out that the position really is needed, and if at all possible, if we could really outpace the snail, maybe even a turtle, and get this going as soon as possible, the veterans out there would be very, very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. And you may have seen on our agenda tonight authorizing a public hearing. We do have to make a slight change in our charter to move this ahead. And, yeah, we do move almost as fast as a snail. Agreed. Faye Gugakis.
Good afternoon. My name is Faye Gugakis. I've lived here since 1982. I've been bicycling since 1982. I've come before you, and I've come before the city of Ithaca for years, talking about safety issues concerning bicycles. So many times. The Lime Bikes came to Ithaca. I spent a whole day calling the county, which did a great job contacting the city, you know, about the fact that they were just put out there at all the bike racks. But I spent all day on the phone. And then Jennifer Dotson tells me, oh, Faye, we heard through the grapevine that you're upset when I was going to Oasis. And she says, be prepared to get a call from Jeff, I think, the guy who organizes the Lime Bikes in this area. So he called me, and I said, you need to have a docking system for the bicycles. Okay, other rentals have that, other bicycle. Well, we don't do it that way, and we're not going to get it. So I say to you, as a seasoned bicyclist, I'm against the Lime Bikes. I think they're a disaster for our community, and I want them to go away. But there is preparation from what I see that the scooters are trying to get here. And yes, through the Ithaca Times, the article in the Ithaca Times, the guy said, he and then I saw the meeting, the repeat, the council meeting, because I wasn't there. He said, if I don't get the scooters here, I can't make a profit. This is not about profits. This is a this is about, you know, if you want people to get on bicycles, there's other ways for people to get on bicycles. There's other way to save the planet. But let me tell you this. I have come to you so many times about this. My representative, Rich John, recently at a county board meeting, which I watched at home, said, I think the Lime bikes are great. Oh, that's on the archives. You can't deny that. So how can then I call you the way I call my council people, or I go to the mayor, or my representative from the city? Well, how could I get support then for my concerns? Nobody's caring about my concerns. So you have Vicki Armstrong, Jennifer Dotson, other people who work for the county on sustainability issues, okay? They have never, ever cared about my concerns. We have people texting and driving. We have bicycles texting and driving. We have, using the cell phone while biking. We have Lime bikes doing that. We have bicycles coming down the wrong way. We have tinted windows, which are extremely dangerous to everybody, but especially to me. Because I ride my bike every day. How many of you ride your bike every day? Every day?
Almost every day.
All through the winter? Okay. Do you ride all over downtown? Okay. So do you see any concerns that I have raised? Yes or no?
They have about
okay.
A minute and a half.
So the thing here is there was a meeting about 2 weeks ago at the county library. That was very emotional for me because I asked to speak when the cameras weren't working, and I feel I was polite. Is there something wrong with passion? There shouldn't be anything wrong with passion because I watch a lot of news, and the Me Too movement said you shouldn't be afraid of a woman showing her anger, and I am angry. And in Tompkins County in the city of Ithaca, women's rights were thrown out the window. Not by everybody, mind you, but the prevailing wind. We're supporting people like the guy on the comments who harasses people. That's excessive panhandling, who cursed at me, okay, and I complained to the police. Yeah, these are a lot of things that I don't get to be able to tell you in 3 minutes. The history of discrimination against me in this community. I've been profiled by the Ithaca police. I had to have a meeting with the police chief who says it'll never happen again. Why? Because a citizen in this county who was the head of the History Center, Matt Braun, we went to court and he said, is Faye capable of knowing it's my dog that was barking? And Judge Rosner threw that question out the window. That was discriminatory beyond compare. And now that keeps happening and happening, and I discover it. And now I had the city administrator, Dan Kogan, spit in my face while he was standing with that individual right there, George McGonigal, who I've spent countless of hours talking about the Lime bikes. Countless of hours. And now
Thank
I got
you,
this letter. Is it five? Yes. Now I got this letter from the city that is trying to silence me. That's what happens to activists. They silence you. They say, you're crazy. I've been an activist all my adult life,
Faye.
And that's what they do in other countries.
Faye, we agreed before.
Yeah.
You've been
yeah,
had more
I know.
Than 5 minutes.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I thought yeah. I had another 2 minutes left, to be honest.
You
I'm
had,
sorry. But
yeah.
But I want
more
you to hear
five,
what I
Faye.
Just, the last part that I said. I was
we
spit
have
at by the city administrator, and I called the police. Okay, and this is the letter you got. That's the way the city is responding. And
Thank
it's
you,
serious
Faye.
To me.
Thank you, Faye. Is there anybody else who would like to address the legislature? All right, we hear you, Faye. Thank you very much. Municipal officials. George McGonigal, I'm not sure if anybody else is here. George, welcome. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed last month. I didn't know that it was on a Thursday instead of a Tuesday. I don't have a lot prepared. The city is busy fixing broken water mains. We had the big snowstorm a couple weeks ago. We're studying ways that we might improve sidewalk snow removal. It's really not working real well the way it is, particularly on corners. We're in the process of hiring two new crews for the DPW, and that should make sidewalk snow less of a challenge next year. We're finishing up two neighborhood studies, one for the south side, one for the waterfront. Those will be wrapped up and approved or not approved in the near future. And I guess I'll leave it at that and try to answer your questions.
Thank you, George. Questions for George? I'm curious, the waterfront plan, when do you think that'll be ready?
I think not as soon as the south side plan. The south side plan's about done, but, you know, I'm on the waterfront committee, and I just keep coming to the meetings, and we're not at the last meeting yet. So this definitely, I would say, before summer, he said, not really knowing the answer.
Not really. Okay. All right. Just that a lot of things are happening really fast. So.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
Okay. Thank you, George. Henry.
George, is there any time frame when the South Hill plan will be started?
Well, we were hoping that the South Hill plan would be next, but it's not going to be. The next plan is going to be what they're calling the West End, West Downtown area, like between the Commons and the railroad tracks, basically. That's going to be next. And I think that's part of the reason is because of a lot of development on the close-by horizon. So we were lobbying for South Hill, but that's not going to be the next in the queue. Hopefully the next after that.
Okay. Anybody else for George? You're getting off easy tonight, George.
Yeah, I am.
All right, thanks
again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming. Appreciate it. A legislator, a privilege of the floor. Before we start, I wanted to say I think you'll probably all join me in wishing Jim Blizzard a happy birthday today. Jim? Hey, Jim. Happy birthday to you. For the public, Jim is the person who sends our meetings out over the airwaves, and we thank you every 2 weeks. Thanks, Jim. Yeah, George?
One thing I forgot. It's Black History Month, and there's going to be a talent show at the high school on the 15th of February that is generally a great event, and I hope as many of you can go there. It should be a lot of fun.
Aren't you also having a celebration tomorrow night for the Santa Claus?
Oh, yes. At City, the Common Council meeting tomorrow night is the Diane Sams Award, the annual award. And this year, I'm very pleased and proud that my dear friend Christine Barksdale is going to be getting the award, and nobody would deserve it more than her. That's it.
Thank you, George. That's great news. Legislator, privilege of the floor. I'm going to put the NYSAC attendees on the spot, so I hope you're ready. Six legislators went to all or part of NYSAC, New York State Association of Counties Legislative Conference last week. Jason was there as well, and I had asked folks to give some updates from some of the sessions that they went to. So, Anne and then Shauna.
Well, I Well, just note, I was only there for the standing meetings on the first day, and I went to a transportation one, which was wonderful to hear all of the support that they're interested in putting in throughout the state, looking for opportunities to support transit agencies and specifically improving technologies for coordinating different modes of transit. And so I spoke to the rep from the DOT afterwards about all of the amazing work that's being done here and how they absolutely would benefit tremendously by supporting our lovely system and pilots. And I understand that our County Administrator Jason will be pursuing that further. The discussion of the day was marijuana, it seemed, in pretty much every arena. And one of the standing committees, the health standing committees, a proposal, a resolution was put forward to urge the state to be very cautious in moving forward. They didn't go so far as to oppose it. But there were some legislators in the group who had done extensive research, understood the risks, including Shauna, myself, and several reps from Saratoga that were able to get some of the language clarified and some of the language removed that didn't have significant support as far as the risks were concerned. So I think ultimately it was a more balanced resolution. So those were some of the big things on my plan. I'll leave it to others to add more. Shauna.
Yeah, Anna mentioned the standing committee that we're both a part of. Legalizing was definitely the main focus of that committee. We also talked about expanding infrastructure for public health and safety, as well as calling on the Office of Mental Health, Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse, and the governor to ensure long-term viability of housing programs for individuals with serious mental illness and substance use disorder. I went to a few seminars while I was there. One of them was Advocating for Your County, which talked a little bit about lobbying. On the state level, it talked about the schedules of some of our lawmakers, as well as how to be consistent and get through the doors. The other seminar that I attended was the County Veteran Services. There were three representatives there, and they all have veteran services in their counties. And they talked about the different ways that they provide services, everything from referral services to care management to helping veterans find jobs and also helping veterans that need rehab and treatment, helping them get into those different places.
Thanks, Shauna. Deborah.
Well, Annie and Shauna and I all attended a session on recycling. It was perhaps one of the most informative convention sessions that I've ever attended. They had a gentleman from the state DEC who oversees recycling issues. They had the head of their recycling operations in Monroe County. And they had a gentleman who operates the landfill for three counties up in the North Country. It was very informative. I was really sorry that they didn't have a handout of some kind. It revealed to me that I had some really basic misunderstandings about the source of a lot of our problems with recycling. Apparently, it's not the plastic that's the real problem. It's the paper and the fiber. And so I find myself agreeing with Mr. Sigler that paper bags are not the answer to our single-use problem here, and that no matter what the state does, we need to make it expensive to use paper bags also. We need to have reusable bags, and that's something that I hope that we can work on.
I would like to ask Jim in the booth to copy that and send it to me via email.
We always were looking
waving.
At a fee. I can put it in writing for you, Mary.
Thanks, Deborah. Rich or Annie? And other people about other topics, too.
Sure, I can go next. So there were quite a few good workshops that I went to this year. And this first one, I'm not sure if I'd call it a good one, but it was on Indian affairs and gaming, and I was taken aback to see no Indian representatives in the room, and a lot of the talk was trying to make sure that the Indians didn't get more money through gaming. And sports betting is the latest thing coming out, and they were talking a lot about trying to make sure that that didn't go to the Indian casinos. So they're trying to figure out how to stop that. So that was a bit disturbing. Let's see. On a better note, agricultural and rural issues. We talked, or they talked a lot about how dairy is struggling. And they also talked about how hemp, though, is a burgeoning crop. And so I'd like to see how we can encourage that more here. CBD production is also a burgeoning commodity, and also then recreational marijuana. And so they did talk a lot about trying to make sure, if we can, to figure out how to make sure that local farmers can profit and switch over to these type of products versus big companies. Because if we don't figure out how to do that, big companies are going to come in. And we already know, I think we've heard that they're eyeing different properties, commercial producers. So they also talked about climate change, that they'd like to see statewide and locally, that farmers and rural counties address climate issues as much as they can, including HABs, but we're still not sure where the state money is going to go. There's state money allocated for HABs, but nobody knows where that's going yet. Water management is a big issue regarding, you know, because of the heat waves, the droughts, and because of the floods we've had. So there, again, that was a big issue. And as one aside, we a couple of other legislators were lucky enough to drive back and forth to Albany with me in my new electric car. But we did discover on the way back, when the temperature is zero, the energy efficiency is really, really bad. So, and then I just read an article about that too today. I wish I'd known that before, but the article had just come out. So I appreciate everybody in the car, Shauna freezing to death in the back seat, and Deborah and Martha. It was up front helping me, trying to figure out what can we reduce, what can we not use. So we were cold for quite a bit of the time, and we did everything short of throwing our suitcases out to lessen the weight. So I appreciate everybody helping with that.
And if I may, we also discovered that rides in Annie's Tesla may be an extremely useful bribe for many people in Albany. Just saying.
That's true. We almost had somebody.
Yeah, one of our meetings on Wednesday, Annie, Shauna, and Deborah and I had a series of meetings, and one of them was with a staff person for Senator Kevin Parker, who chairs the Energy and Telecommunications Committee in the Senate. And this staff person, Joshua Jones, was real excited about the Tesla and was ready to, like, go outside and have a ride. And didn't happen, but that's what Deborah's talking about. So, Rich.
Thank you. And each year I go to NYSEC, I'm just continually impressed with the wealth of information you take away. One of the presentations on hemp, there was a hemp farmer down in the Hudson Valley who came in and spoke about that product as opposed to marijuana, and really provided some great detail differentiating why hemp is so different and how you grow it and how it's being marketed. And it really has some possibility in the Finger Lakes that we should be looking at that are not marijuana related. I'd say that. I attended the Public Safety Committee meeting. We passed some resolutions. One in particular was interesting to me. It was urging New York State to pass legislation to include opiate clones, synthetic opiates, in as scheduled drugs. What seems to be happening are there's some very dangerous forms of opiates where through chemistry they're tweaking it just slightly so it is not the same as the scheduled drug. And so they can sell them without any consequence until somebody realizes it and you have to include it on a schedule. But with these are derivatives similar to fentanyl, which are much stronger than your typical opiates and lead to a lot of the overdoses that we're seeing. And there's no way to really do anything about it from a public safety standpoint unless they're scheduled. And what this legislation would do is just treat them the same, even if they're marginally different from the other ones. There was another presentation on an OD mapping system, and this is an electronic system that's national at this point. But what it does is it allows first responders and reporters who are encountering overdoses to indicate where and when they're happening. And particularly this is helpful when there's a very bad batch of drugs going into a community that you can quickly identify it and warn people. And it's had some success in limiting some of the overdoses. And there was a great presentation on that. I also went to a presentation on volunteer firefighters and first responders and the efforts to try to increase volunteerism. This is an issue across New York State and the country on how do we get people to volunteer as firefighters. There were a lot of really good ideas, and the people who are on the panel had thought very deeply on this issue. And again, it's you come to one of these NYSAC meetings, and people just share a tremendous amount of really useful information. So I felt I really gained from it.
Thank you, Anna.
One comment to a previous conversation with George, but then a question for you, Rich. So I just wanted to point out one of the things about South Hill not being the next neighborhood to be evaluated is because they want to do an investigation citywide about the infill argument discussion. So because that initiated in South Side or South Hill, that, you know, it's better to finish that conversation first before continuing. So that was part of that reason. But I'm curious, Rich, a similar resolution, maybe Sean will remember all the details too, was considered in the standing committee that we were in. And one of the problems was that we could continue to add analogs onto that list, but then they could continue to just modify a small molecule and boom, you've got another analog, and there's an infinite number of analogs. And not just a fentanyl, which was the one that we were considering, but really pretty much for any drug. And so there was a debate about how we could effectively cover that so that it would be an umbrella, an efficient umbrella over all of it. Did you guys, because I don't think we ultimately came up with language that I think was...
We were talking about your resolution.
So did you
further... It was the same resolution.
Did you extend it beyond what came out of our committee?
No.
Okay.
No, we didn't solve the problem.
Okay.
But we urged New York State to try to get language that would address it.
Okay. So it'll at least start it.
Right.
Okay.
There is a resolution. We've got the packet of resolutions that was passed, and I have this one, have it here as it was passed. I'm not going to be able to. There it is. It came out of public health and mental health, but was also talked about in public safety, which is I'm on that committee as well. So it says the resolved is hereby urges the governor and state legislature to amend the law to include as a controlled substance any substance that meets the definition of fentanyl-related substance as defined in to 21 CFR section blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so I know it's certainly on the list. Rich, you're very modest and didn't talk about the workshop that you presented.
I went to that as well, and Rich was one of the presenters about our alternatives programs, alternatives to incarceration, and the results that we've seen in Tompkins County, and together with two people from New York State. So I think it was really, I'm sorry, New York City. I think it was really important that we had an upstate, relatively small county presenting about ATIs and not just kind of here's how New York City does it, which is impressive. But when they talk about a $12 million budget just for electronic monitoring or whatever, like clearly the two people there from Cortland County who were certainly searching for answers were not likely to find them in New York City. So it was, and we had a number of conversations with the Cortland County legislators, and we hope to follow up with them on these issues. But that Rich's workshop was very well attended. The other moderator was a woman from Westchester County. They had a lot of good experience as well. There were a lot of questions, a lot of discussion at the end, and they had to kick them out of the room for the next workshop to come in. So, Rich, that was really well received, and thank you very much for making that presentation. So, I went to a couple of other – I went to the standing committee, the Public Safety Standing Committee, but also the Climate Resiliency Committee. And in particular, I wanted to mention the plenary session on marijuana, where they had some very – and NYSEC does a really good job of finding a way to talk about policy without being ideological, to being pragmatic, sort of everywhere in every one of these discussions, talking to the representatives and saying, look, this is going to happen. It's probably going to happen this year. And how do we understand it and what's our role? One of the things I took out of it was a really important distinction that if the law identifies marijuana as agricultural, then it will be regulated under local land use, under the agricultural law, the ag laws. If it's identified as industrial, then that's where we're going to see warehouses and indoor grow lights and energy use, explode to meet this need. And it will probably be Pepsi-Cola and Big Tobacco coming in to do it. So that one issue seems to be really critical, and NYSEC is going to include that issue in their lobbying because it really – there are a lot of issues with how you do it could make this a good thing or not as good of a good thing for New York State. I also – and I think a few of us went to the state budget review, which was always really informative. And one thing I'm really pleased about, and I copied the resolution and put it on your desks somewhere, that NYSAC picked up something that Charlie Krasansky from Cornell, told me about that for community college funding, that the state, that the SUNY chancellor has promoted, is promoting and pushing a proposal for they're calling it a hybrid proposal for funding community colleges going forward. An FTE increase, as they usually ask, but also a maintenance of effort funding, basically a floor, so that even if your enrollment goes down, you will never have less money come from the state than you had the year before. I mean, it is such a critical part of this that we can't, the colleges simply can't keep up with what they have to do with the level of funding that's coming from New York State, and especially with the property tax cap being permanent, it's going to make it increasingly difficult for counties to make up the difference. I did some calculations, and we had, I think if the FTE aid had kept up with inflation, since 2008, instead of about $2,800 per FTE, it would be about $3,300 per FTE. So they're really falling farther and farther behind. As I said, on Wednesday, the conference was over, but the four of us went to the governor's office and a number of legislative offices as well. and spoke about the community college funding. We talked about property tax cap, talked about, I can't remember what our other priorities were, but there were, we had a meeting with the governor's energy person, so we talked about the airport and potential, the geothermal initiative and the potential microgrid. We talked with, the governor's person on education felt that, hey, we've been increasing the FTE aid every year. Well, that's because the legislature always puts money in, but they always propose it as flat funding. So he was taking credit for what the legislature did because the governor signs it after all. So we had a lively back and forth on that. We talked some about Code Blue and the homelessness programs. There was a long list of things. I'm happy to send folks a list of the offices we went to and the topics that we discussed. So, is there any other legislative privilege? We sort of, it doesn't have to all be NYSAC. So, Rich and then Mike Lane.
Outside of NYSAC, I did want to just respond to the speaker who had mentioned I thought line bikes were great. I think the line bikes are a net positive in our community. I don't recall saying great as the sole judgment on them. I worry that the line bikes are in places where they obstruct pedestrians. They're left in odd places. I see a lot of people riding them without helmets, which I worry about. But they're riding bikes, and that is a good thing. And we have a great biking city. So it provides an opportunity for people that otherwise wouldn't be riding bikes to be out doing that. Can it be better? Yeah. And I think that we're going to see this program grow, I hope, and get managed better, as it should be. But overall, I don't think it's a bad thing that we have the line bikes in our community. But I just wanted to clarify. I didn't go straight to great.
Thank you, Rich. Mike Lane.
I guess I got to talk a little bit about NYSAC, even though I didn't go. What I want to say to you all who went is thank you, because what you bring back to us, what you interact with other people from other counties, is a net benefit to the people of Tompkins County, who you represent. So thank you for doing that and telling us about things, letting us learn. One thing I've discovered about local government in the years that I've been in it is it's awful easy to become very parochial and think that what you're doing is the only way to do things and that what you're doing is cutting edge. Well, when you go to these kind of meetings, you find out maybe we aren't on the cutting edge. Maybe some people are out there, some of the counties are way ahead of us on things, and that's healthy for us to be shown that. The people of Tompkins County sponsor you to go to that with their tax money, and you come back better educated and better representatives because of that. And I just want to say thank you. And Martha, the resolution coming out about the community colleges is terribly commendable. The state basically has treated community colleges as a poor relation. Often ignoring them to the benefit of the SUNY schools and not the community colleges. And, you know, we're stuck with maintenance of effort issues for our funding for community college. We can't go backwards. And for our library, why can't the state of New York abide by the same rules that it gives for us? So I think that's pretty important. And thank you for your efforts on that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And Dr. Montague and Blitzy Tage helped me with some of the background that we sent off to NYSAC the week before. So the resolution that I've got on your desk, it really is a much stronger resolution than they were planning to pass. And Steve Aquario is going to put that as one of the top issues in his testimony to the state budget. So I'm hoping that'll show that it's not just kind of pro forma, yeah, we want more money, but it's a different formula. Leslin.
Thank you. I was about to ask Mike if there's any other way. Of course we're the best and cutting edge.
Well, we're certainly a leader, there's no question, but we're not always right out there.
quite right, you are. Thank you all for attending NYSAC. I do miss attending that conference. And thank you for not only the information, but I want to put a special thank you for Annie. You know, I go to the conference for the swag. I'm not going to lie. You know, they got lots of swag. Only the only swag I like are pens. So Annie brought me back a wash of multicolored pens. So thank you, Annie, for that. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I missed the proclamation for Black History Month. I do want to express. We didn't do it yet?
We're doing it as a resolution. You didn't miss it.
Oh, it's a proclamation, so
well,
I missed
yeah.
it. Okay, all right. Well, then I'll shut up. Thanks in advance. Well, happy Black History Month, everyone. And I hope that everybody is recognizing and celebrating the achievements of our African-American residents in a true form. Try to get to as many events as you can get to. There's lots of educational events. Last week I had the privilege of participating in a panel at Ithaca College on the N-word. Wonderful, wonderful presentation and presentation we hope to. I hope that it could be done again in the community as it's such a charged word. And, you know, there's always debater who can and who can't use it. As far as I'm concerned, don't. No one should use it. So it was quite an interesting discussion. I also want to acknowledge that on Friday there was an ALANA reception. ALANA stands for, it's an acronym for African American, Latinx, Asian, and Native American members of our community. It was a reception. The WDIC represented the county at that reception. We had well over 200 people in attendance, and it was for a first event. It was very amazing. The feedback was great for folks who have been in our community, and often they come to our college campuses and are trying to find out where is the community outside of campus. So for people to be able to network, for employers to see that there are opportunities that you can reach diverse groups of people, for them to hear about employment opportunities within not just county government but throughout Tompkins County, was a fantastic, fantastic event, and we do hope to do it again. So thanks to us as a county for participating, the city, Cornell University, Ithaca College, TC3, Wegmans, and GIAC, a couple of other folks, I can't remember all who were at the table, but we're very thankful for that. George did mention February 15th. Another event that you're welcome to attend. We hope to see you. GX annual Black History Month Community Talent Show. We do some historical facts about Black history, as well as just a showcase of talent, and we do encourage people to attend. And I want to give you a heads up way in advance. Your Women's History Month coming up. Mark your calendars. March 14th. March 14th? Okay. Thursday, March 14th, is the annual Sister Friends Women's History Month event, where about 350 to 375 intergenerational women converge on Ithaca College for a luncheon and a time of fellowship, camaraderie, and networking. It is a wonderful event. In honor of Women's History Month. So please mark your calendars in advance. Tickets are $20. It's been $20 for the past 15 years when we started this event, and I think it'll continue to be that this year. So please do mark your calendars. And I think that's all I have.
Thank you, Leslie. Anybody else? All right. Thank you. And a couple of other things for my report. I'm going to be asking the Government Operations Committee to develop a flag policy for our. I know Mike's favorite subject. We're going to have a resolution about the African American Black History Month flag, but we wanted to establish a policy that makes makes it clear and transparent and fair about, you know, how, what groups, you know, what flags we will fly and how do we decide, that sort of thing. So thank you, Gio, for taking that up. I also wanted to mention...
As you direct.
What?
As you direct.
And I wanted to mention that a number of folks... Leslie?
I just wanted to mention to Mike, as Chair of Government Operations, that the City of Ithaca has already taken up a flat policy, so you might not have to reinvent the wheel. You might just steal what they have and fashion it.
The City of Ithaca, the person, they have not...
They haven't passed it yet.
They haven't passed it yet. And, in fact, the Chair of the committee has just resigned.
I don't think we will ever have a policy that will satisfy everybody.
I hope you don't resign over this, Mike.
Don't worry about that.
I understand the town of Lansing and the town of Caroline have adopted policies, and we can look around at other places as well and come up with something that should be fair and clear for members of the public. I just also want to mention you've heard us talk about the Third County Court, one of those, I feel like Moby, you know, Captain Ahab and Moby Dick with this. But we've gotten a lot of involvement from the presiding judge, Beth Gary of the Third Department, and Judge Molly Fitzgerald from the Sixth District, and Rich and Mike also came, joined me for a meeting with them and four other judges, plus Ray Schlatter and Amy Hendricks on Friday. We are really pursuing a multi-pronged approach on both the legislative side as well as the Court of Claims sort of appointment by the governor's office direction. So there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes on that. I just wanted to let you all know. So happy to answer questions on that anytime, too. The hard ones I'm going to let Mike and Rich answer because I can't explain the court system. Henry.
I'd also like to maybe make a comment about the Hoovers of the Fourth Legislators. I'd like to make a comment about Bree Newsom, who's coming to Cornell on February 11th. Bree Newsom, she's an activist. She would talk about her work as an activist, community organizer, including when she famously removed the Confederate flag from South Carolina State House in 2015. She'll be speaking at Sage Chapel at 7 p.m. Monday, February 11th.
Great. Thank you very much, Henry. Anything else? Any questions from my report? Oh, I do have some appointments. Thank you, Kathy. To the Tompkins County Area Development Executive Committee, appointing myself as chair of the legislature. And on the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance Board, we sort of appointed Heather McDaniel. Turns out Katie Borghella had already been appointed in July, and we just, you know, have to correct that. So I'm rescinding Heather McDaniel's non-appointment to Mega Board. All right. County Administrator Jason Molino.
Thank you very much. I have a few updates. I attended NYSAC as well. I attended two meetings, standing committee meetings, public employee relations, and intergovernmental. The issue that was discussed, there was not a resolution voted on, but they made the announcement that they were going to support this resolution on community college funding at the resolutions committee, which they did. So there was discussion, there was unanimous support in the room for it, and then it went to the resolutions committee and was voted on. The public employee relations meeting was interesting, and there were three resolutions. The one of significance, I think, was that they were asking the state to reimburse counties for the increase in the district attorney's salaries that happened 3 years ago. And this is the same resolution they've adopted for the past 2 years and have had no response from. So my question that I posed, which may have caused more heartache than not, was why are we doing it the same way if we haven't had any result? And I said, you know, my suggestion was perhaps maybe there is an opportunity to partner with the DA's Association where we can start to play towards some of the state interests, such as grant us reimbursement if district attorneys were to develop ATI plans and submit them to the state.
alternative to incarceration plan, which is something that the state is interested in. Something that otherwise the state, I don't see any reason on why they would provide you any reimbursement that they haven't done 2 years prior, but provide some interest that's going to gauge their interest with it. That actually got some traction, and they were going to communicate with the DA's Association to see if there's interest in that. So that was a little bit of excitement from an otherwise not very exciting agenda. I attended a few meetings. One was of interest. The material wasn't that interesting, but what came out of the discussion, Martha and I attended this meeting, this session together. It was about climate change and jobs related to climate change, and there were a lot of communities promoting their clean energy community status and some of the things they had done, like put in EV stations, and then it triggered the question between us about, well, how many EVs do we have in our county fleet? So, you know, I texted Arel and said, well, how many do we have? And I got several updates, and I thought it'd be an interesting number that after this year's purchases, we'll have 27 EVs in our fleet, light-duty vehicles. And I think it's something to clap about because other communities were interested in sharing that they have one or two. I would say in a matter of 2 or 3 years, you'll probably have all your light-duty fleet replaced.
Are we counting any Tesla?
No, county-owned vehicles. So I thought that was worth mentioning. I had not realized the numbers that we had. But really made an effort, particularly with this budget. I think there was a total of 10 to 15 that were added, or will be added. So I thought it was worth mentioning. State budget, it's an ever-changing process right now. There was some news that came out. I don't know if anybody's really clear as to what it means yet with some revenue shortfalls at the state. I suspect the 21-day or 30-day amendments to the governor's amendments will possibly reflect some of that. So this is a changing environment right now, as it usually is. I've asked department heads that as they learn more about specific proposals to have me involved in some dialogue so I can keep up to date with the different elements of it. And right now, a lot is probably going to change over the next 2 to 3 weeks. So I'll continue to update the legislature on relevant things that I can and try to give a little bit of a summary when we have some more substance to talk about. Youth Services Director Search, we have completed interviews. I hope to make an extended offer this week, so hopefully something to announce at the next meeting. For your confirmation and consideration. Yesterday, had an all-day trip to Albany with Scott Vanderpool from TCAT, the executive director. I circulated the presentation material that we went. Charlie Zansky from Cornell was instrumental in setting up several meetings. We met with the Assembly Chair for Transportation, the Senate Chair for Transportation. Saw Assemblywoman Lifton. Also met with Senator O'Meara, as well as a member of the governor's staff, the assistant or deputy secretary of transportation, really laying out for TCAT what they have in the upcoming future. It's a very unique transit relationship or transit situation where it's not an authority. It's probably one of the largest nonprofit arrangements when we talk about transit for an area of this size. Shared with them some of the upcoming challenges and opportunities they have with fleet replacement, going to electric fleet, and then also facility challenges that may be coming in the near future. It was a great series of meetings. It was really about laying groundwork and getting it on the radar of our elected officials to see where capital opportunities and capital funding can help us. Contact that Anna made, which we're going to follow up with Ron, and he's the CFO of DOT. Scott knows him from his association, so we'll continue to follow those channels up. And as these discussions develop more about the capital needs of TCAT, we'll continue to press on in Albany and see if we can get additional resources to assist. One thing I will say that I mentioned to all the senators and assemblymen, particularly the transportation chairs and our own, Assemblywoman Lifton and Senator O'Meara, is you talk about inflation not keeping up with community colleges. There's a little known secret. 38 cities in the state of New York, and Ithaca being one of them, have one of the longer standing shared service agreements with the state DOT in which they maintain state roads, and the state reimburses them a set amount of dollars and cents per drivable yard. That formula hasn't been updated since 1982.
Oh.
So there has been in the past 2 years. I bring this up because I gave a plug to help both our good city of Ithaca that they should vote for that legislation increasing the inflation up to current day standards so that they increase the reimbursement for maintaining state roads, because there are 4 or 5 state routes that come through Ithaca. And there's only 38 cities that benefit from it. It's a small amount of money, but important piece of
shared services. So I just want to share that with that and give a good plug to the city. Brian Robeson is fully transferred, fully transitioned into the DUR director position. Lee Shurtleff is still going to assist on project basis, but right now Brian is filling the role full time and things seem to be going well. We touched base last week on it. Two other things. Just found out today, you may not have got the email, but heard from Angela Sullivan. The health department made announcements on funding for facilities. They did not get their funding. They did not get the funding. That was through two separate channels. That was the Department of Health. This was an overdue award that was supposed to be done last April. They did not get funding. Keep in mind, there's still the OASIS application that they are working on. I spoke with Angela yesterday. They're working with Frank and Sharon to make sure that their application through the OASIS funding is full and meets all the high points it needs to. Obviously, the fact that they have site control is a big part of that application. We're very hopeful for that, but they did not get the Department of Health funding. I have one thing after that, but I can answer a question now if you want.
Yeah, that one was when they applied, they didn't have site control.
Yes. Yeah.
And they were not allowed to update the application after they got site control.
That is correct.
I mean, there's a, you know, there are rules, and, you know, you apply as of whenever the deadline is. And even though the deadline was, you know, a year ago or something, and they're 9 months past when they were supposed to announce, that's too bad. Okay. Anna?
So did they give a reasoning for not approving? Was it because the application as it stood did not have site control, or were there other issues that they identified?
This was just announced this afternoon, so I don't think I have not had a chance to follow up with Angela, and I doubt she has had a chance to follow up as to why. But I'm sure she will.
I hope she does, especially before she applies.
I'm sure she will. Last thing, just a FYI, you know, we've had two weather events over the past 2-3 weeks that have been, you know, a little severe. For this weather event, internally, we usually have an internal conference call with relevant department heads, whether it's Jeff Smith, the sheriff, Arrell Facilities, Lisa and Amy join me, Marsha Lynn's joined me, Dewar joins the conversation. We include DSS, we include COFA. You know, so we Frank Krupa from Department of Health. We usually have those conference calls, you know, as we're entering into the event. This is usually planned, you know, events that we can predict or that we know is coming when it comes to weather events. We usually keep in communication throughout it, depending on the severity or what happens. Also, we have had an increased interest from the state to have regular updates to the governor's rep. So Phil Rumsey is our rep. I deal with him on a regular basis. We have a we usually talk at the beginning of an event, so we set a schedule that I can update him regularly so that he is not constantly calling me in the middle of an operation, but it works out very well. He's very responsive to that. He understands the challenges with that. And also, I usually am in touch with Dan Cogan, Chief of Staff from the city, so we keep in communication as we go through these events. If there's any ever need of resources, that lines of communication are open. So, nothing, no action for you. Just want to make you aware that we usually have a good lines of communication internally and with our partners during these events as things come up, whether it's the city and or the state.
And Phil is usually on the phone with me, too. So, yeah. Annie?
Thank you, Jason. I had a question back about the electric vehicles.
Yes.
So does the 27, does that number include plug-in hybrids?
I don't think it does, but I'll have to check. Now you're making it. I'll have to check.
Henry.
The people who have the vehicles, they say they have enough adequate charging stations?
Do they have enough adequate charging stations?
Right.
The ones that are here have adequate charging stations. I mean, everyone has a charging, every vehicle has a charging station. I know the large purchases we made at the tail end of last year and this year have an addition of charging stations to accommodate them, accommodate the addition.
Any other questions for Jason? Thank you so much for going to TCAT, going to Albany, back to Albany for those meetings with Scott Vanderpool. Really appreciate that. And a huge shout-out to Charlie Krasansky from Cornell. He helped us set up and identify who we should talk to on the day that we went as well, and to help us get some of those appointments. He's really an incredible resource in terms of strategy and
and connections. So
his whole staff are great.
Thank you very much, Jason. Jonathan Wood, county attorney. Oh, Mike?
I just wanted to make a comment. That was a great report, Jason. I don't know when you slept during that time.
I will say that, you know, I did have, sorry, Jonathan, driving back on Wednesday, we hit the same weather that we drove in separate cars. And I have the Jeep Patriot, the assessment Jeep Patriot, which has crank windows. but my heat worked just fine.
Saves on electricity.
Yeah, right. So it was an energy efficient one way or another, but it was a little frustrating driving home. It was tedious at certain points, but we made it all right. Thank you.
Ann's story made me think of Apollo 13.
Yeah. The trunk actually opened at one point. Lights did actually go off, and we got to talk to a friendly state trooper twice who made sure we were okay. It was challenging.
I just got a text. Someone is watching the meeting tonight. Yes, the 27 does include hybrid plug-ins. Okay.
Yeah. Well, did any of us not have a car issue on the way to or from Albany?
Well, we would not have made it back if we didn't have a Tesla to be able to fast charge it. I tried to charge it again when I was in Albany with a regular charger, and it was going down. It was so cold that it wasn't able to charge my car, so I just hopped on and made it home barely on
fumes.
Electron fumes.
Use that term.
All right, Jonathan, top that.
I didn't have a report, but I do have a follow-up to Jason's, is that his comment about the agreements between municipalities and the state to do state roads, and that the amount hasn't changed in 20 years. The county used to have one of those, and we gave up on it for that reason. And it's interesting to know that they still haven't raised the price. and also, we had some lawsuits because the county would have the liability for the plowing, and you wouldn't get reimbursed with the state, so you were doing it kind of at the county taxpayer risk. Which made it all the more important that they pay us fairly to do that. So I hope
it goes through. I know
it
Senator,
goes through, and that municipalities are paid fairly for that.
I know Senator O'Meara had introduced it for the past 2 years. I know it's being picked up again. It's good for the cities, you know, so for the city of Ithaca, I hope it pulls through, and I hope they're able to get an increased amount of reimbursement for it. So,
but other than that, no report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Thank you, Martha. In your packet, we have a sales tax presentation for you tonight with a casino report. There's four pages altogether, and I even given you my notes as the top page so we can all sing along. The reason I want to take a little bit of time tonight to show you both December receipts on page 2, and the fourth quarter receipts on the third page, and then the history to date receipts. This is the end of the year, and we are closing out the year, and so we can look at some hard facts as to how well we did as both compared to budget and compared to last year. So that's why I gave you the notes, so that you could take this along with you. And also, since we've talked about, Mike Lane has brought up a number of times concerns about the casino dollars and Del Lago being in trouble and having their bond rating reduced, I thought it was apparent that you would want to know just how we did at the end of the year. So if we look at the first report for December, you can see that the county's portion of sales tax distributions for December was down 7.85%. It's the first month in a long, long time, I think maybe this year, that we actually had receipts for just one month this December compared to last December being down. But as I drilled back and looked at last year's report, last December was exceedingly high over the previous year. So in 2017, that particular December was a 17.1% increase over the previous December. So that was an anomaly that we pretty much knew we weren't going to hit that target again. So December compared to last year was down, and that's what's shown on the first report when you're looking at that middle section. If you move over to the right-hand columns where we can look at the year-to-date, and this is what I really wanted to concentrate on, as of the end of December, the year-to-date tax distributions for the counties totaled $37,190,459 compared to $35,262,872 in 2017. This represents an increase of $1,927,587 year over year, or a 5.47% increase. And if you compare that to what the state has put out, you've seen a state report come out within the last 3 or 4 days that shows all the counties, that's very close to the number that they were showing for Tompkins County. Now, when we look at that $1.9 million increase year over year, that's still not quite the same as comparing to budget. How well did we do compared to budget? Well, we'll look at that in a minute, but I wanted to go to the next report, which was the quarterly report. And when you're looking at the fourth quarter, even though December was down, you can see that the sales tax distributions for the fourth quarter were up 1.33%. So when you look at October, November, and December combined compared to the fourth quarter of last year, we were actually up in the fourth quarter. Going to that right-hand column again, you can see that we're 5.47% up for the year. But here's what I wanted to bring to your attention for the budget. If you go down to the new table at the bottom that we put into this report about 6 months ago, this was a question that Jason brought up earlier. In fact, he just asked me about it today by email. We have two different ways of tracking sales tax, and that table at the bottom shows the gross budget estimate and the all sales tax revenue. That considers all the sales tax money that comes into the county. And when you look at it that way, the $37,190,000 that we gained last year and that came in receipts is actually 108.5% of budget. So that's very good, exceeding the budget by that much. In fact, for the year, the county came in $2,901,970 over budget, or 108.5% of budget. And this was the highest year for the county in sales tax receipts. The number that Jason and Kevin use in when they look at the operations of the county and how much is dedicated solely for the operation of the county is that second set of computations at the very bottom. That's our unallocated sales tax revenue budget. And when you look at that comparison, we came in at 109% of budget. So once again, far exceeding our budget for fiscal year 2018 and also exceeding last year in the actual collection, comparing 2018 and 2017.
What's the difference between those two? Unallocated is...
The first number that shows the gross budget shows everywhere in our budget where there's a sales tax revenue line on. And the biggest portion of that is in that division, what we call 9999, unallocated revenue. That's the portion that Jason and Kevin use to balance the budget, and that's the lion's share or the biggest piece. But you'll find a number of units, about 7 or 8 units throughout the county, where we have dedicated a portion of our sales tax revenue to a particular agency or to TCAT or to one youth services or one thing or another. And so those are smaller revenue line items where there's a portion of our sales tax that's dedicated to a particular operating unit. So we kind of back, that's what makes up the gross number or the bigger number when you add up the 7 or 8 places cross-section across the budget. What goes towards everything else that helps to balance our budget, the main number that Jason and County Administration focuses on is that portion which is unallocated. That's there to fund the whole rest of the general fund.
And so that 109% is about $2.9 million in dollars over what was budgeted. Right?
Correct.
Okay.
Any questions for Rick?
Go ahead.
There's mud.
Okay, clear.
I just have a little follow-up to that before you go.
Yeah, go ahead.
The follow-up is that, if you remember, when we were doing our budget process, part of the budget presentation in September was a projection for how we would finish the year. That was, we projected we would finish the year at a 6% growth over the prior year, which is, well, we would fix a 6% growth, which is consistent with what this number tells us. So as we projected forward, we looked at two scenarios. One was a slowdown in the economy, and one was a leveling of it. So in terms of positioning well, you know, things have happened as we've thought they've happened for the past 3 or 4 months, in fact, almost dangerously close when we talk about it. And then what we'll do is we'll monitor over the next quarter and into the next quarter how things are balancing compared to the prior year. If you remember right, we did several different types of projections, understanding that growth from year to year would be moderate to able to balance any shifts in the economy. And I'll give you an example of some shifts that are completely inconsistent with each other but may have an impact that we don't know how. One is gas right now is about 50 cents lower than it was 3 months ago. It was supposed to rebound in terms of supply was supposed to be constrained and prices were supposed to go up. That's yet to be seen. Based on our sales tax, gas sales is about 5% of your total sales in the county. So having that low gas price may impact this or help or contribute towards a slowdown in growth of sales tax. The other thing that may have the opposite effect is what happens with the state if they adopt the internet sales. You know, so if internet sales now start to collect more sales tax, they may have the converse effect to it. Don't know what's going to happen. The other game changer that we all learned, anybody that went to the chamber lunch the other day learned that if another government shutdown happens, how could that change the economy? While they still think the next year, 2019, is to grow, it won't be at the same rate that it did 2018 was. So we'll monitor a lot of those variables as we go through the budget retreat preparation process over the next 2 months and try to make a call and as we go to develop the budget and make the assumption. But the good thing is that the projections we put forward, about a 6% growth, is right on point to what we thought would happen in the fall of last year.
And you're talking about the next budget, and Rick is busy closing out this year and getting hives. Deborah, and then Mike.
So thank you, Rick. This is good news, as usual. But I'm curious. I don't remember exactly how our other three quarters of 2018 ended, but I seem to recall that we had a really, dynamic sales tax growth in the beginning of the year,
close to
10%, and I'm wondering if we're seeing any kind of pattern of tailing off.
Well, only in December. That was the only really big negative month. And we've done well on all four quarters for the year. And so some of the things that are happening, there's really not that much that we can say why was December down. But, again, I don't really consider December being down when you consider that last year it was 17% higher. So there's a good leveling of the increase in sales tax, at least when you're looking just at 2018.
And then if I may, can we expect a kind of miserable January given the shutdown?
I can't say that. I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike Lane.
I just wanted to say how much nicer report that was this year than we had back in 2009 when we dropped $3 million. That was scary. But we don't want to rest on our laurels here. It was this growth in sales tax that allowed us to hold our property taxes to a fairly low increase in the levy this year. And we'd like to see that continue, but there is no guarantee. Things can change, as Jason and Rick have been saying. And so we just have to be cautious all the time as we go forward.
Thank you. Annie?
As far as sales tax, you said about 5% is from gasoline tax?
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's about total sales in the county, about 5%. So it's like your number 7 or 8 highest commodity that for sales in the county, yes.
So getting back to electric vehicles again, as people are using more electric vehicles, that is going to drop. I know there's been talk around different parts of the country about adding a tax to that, you know, like they have on gasoline, so that might be something NYSAC or somebody wants to tackle at some point.
True.
For the chargers.
However, a contradiction to that is that your number one sales is automotive sales. So the number one sales in most counties is automotive sales.
Well, we need a Tesla dealership here. So.
Yeah, definitely.
You're going down a path that is starting to have discussion about what happens when you talk about federal transportation bill, which is off of a gas tax. You know, what happens if that consumption decreases and that revenue from that changes? The methods for funding transportation bills may have to change.
Deborah?
So one more question. Do we have any idea what kind of impact it might have here in Tompkins County if, in fact, they eliminate the exemption for sales tax on ESCOs?
That
on what?
On energy service companies, there's
right.
A...
I mean, do we think that that's going to be anything substantial? Or
there was some projections, I thought, and I'd have to look back at the interim, the NYSAC interim report.
It's 48 million statewide.
It was a net positive, but
well,
what it
yeah.
means for us, I don't remember. I mean, it wasn't anything to move mountains, but it was better than nothing.
Maybe a molehill?
Yeah.
Molehill, right.
And the internet sales, if that goes through, they expect maybe 2%. To be added to our income. And I will tell you, on marijuana, the governor's proposal is for, I don't know, maybe this is Liz Krueger's, I don't know, is for a 20% excise tax to go to the state and a 2% excise tax to go to counties. The NYSAC position is actually asking for a 4% sales tax, that it be considered a local sales tax, so that would get shared with local other municipalities in the ways that local municipalities get the rest of our sales tax. So either way, that's, you know, 2% for us. So that's likely to be helpful, maybe not 2019, but soon after that. Mike Sigler?
I just wanted to put this out there since we have such a surplus in sales tax. I wanted to see if maybe there was an appetite at the county level to remove the sales tax on things like heating oil, and natural gas that you heat your home with, and electricity that you heat your home with. I mean, we don't tax food. It seems like we shouldn't be taxing essential like that.
That comes up every so often. There are pluses and minuses to that. Rick, do you want to take that on?
I'm trying to remember how big a percent that is of our total. I think it's 5%. Again, you know, we'd have to, before we drew any conclusions or set a path, we'd have to look at what that would mean to us financially. But I think it's about 5% of our total.
Okay.
Right.
Even if heating is only maybe less than half the year, it's 5% of our total year to year.
Could be, but okay. If it's natural gas, electricity, you're doing air conditioning, and yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Anything else for Rick?
I haven't. And then my last comment on sales tax is that what they're debating right now, even as the gas has gone down the last 2 or 3 months, like Jason has mentioned, and that it very well could continue in the next year, they're not sure on, with that money being freed up to the consumer, how much of those dollars will be spent on other goods and services that, in fact, generate sales tax. So even though that one portion of the sales tax component could continue to go down, it could feed the economy. People could actually take those dollars and go out and spend them on something else. So it's not always a one-to-one ratio when you see movements of this type. And I don't always bring you the casino report, but that's on my summary sheet on the front page. You probably already looked at that. I don't have to say a whole lot. But we were concerned about Del Lago, and as you can see, the 2018 quarters, each and every quarter, first through fourth quarter, was higher than last year in 2017. We ended the year in sales tax $1,956,091 for the year, and that's about the fourth quarter was up 12.2% compared to last year. Year to date, we were up 13.3% compared to the prior year. So even though we had We had some knowledge of things that might not be looking so good. We actually ended the year quite a bit better off than even the previous year. Our budget for 2018, the year just closed, was $1.2 million. So everything over that, the $756,000 over and above, was surplus for us in just looking at the casino gaming revenues.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions?
Rick, are you going to mention the status of your deputy search?
I am. I've got actually three other items real quick, and that was one of them. The status of the deputy position, as you know, the last meeting we met, I had mentioned to you that we had just finished the phone interviews. Now the live interviews have all been completed. I want to thank those who sat on the interview team, the committee that met. I want to thank Mike Lane for being there and not going to NYSAC last week so he could work with us and be on that interview team. I also want to thank Lisa Holmes from County Administration, Elin Dowd from HR. We had three great candidates, and we had accomplished the completion of those interviews last week, and we should be selecting and making an offer by the end of this week. So things are moving right along there.
Thank you. And could you, in the future, talk about them as the in-person interviews instead of the live interviews? We don't have dead interviews, right? So, okay.
Seances.
Thank you.
Okay. There were no dead people there. And my last two comments were on our audits. We're right in the middle now of either closing the books or working in the middle of five audits. So finance department is working on five audits. It'll take our time to go through them all and wrap them up around June. But we're right smack dab in the middle of all that. And my last comment was we have sold $14.5 million of bonds and bands on January 31st. They were priced. Tomorrow in Jonathan's office, we have a pre-closing with the bond attorney. And the actual money will be coming into our coffers on February 20th. And I plan to have a more detailed report on how well we did in the market, although it was all good news. I'll tell you that now. For our next legislative meeting, after we get the funds in the bank, and you can see how my report will include things like what our Moody's rating ended up being, and it also include how we compared to previous years, both bond and band issues.
Anna, then Mike.
Just curious if any of the bonds were refinanced, or were they all new, or what percentage was refinanced if they were?
There were no bonds refinanced, but the bands that we issued the previous year, which were always just one-year bands, the short-term one-year notes, some of those have been reissued for, like, road and bridge projects. The biggest component of this $14.5 million, though, was the $7.5 million for the airport band.
Mike Lane?
Rick, back on the interviews, I think it was very nice that you and HR scheduled the meet and greet with the three candidates.
Yes.
With your staff.
That went very well.
Staff was able to give feedback on the candidates.
Excellent point. And that's all I have.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Anything else for Rick? We all set? All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Henry.
Yes. I'd like to add resolution I, ID number 8404, proclaiming the month of February 29th as African American History Month in Tompkins County.
Thank you. Seconded by Leslin. Nodding, Leslin. Okay. 10 people to vote to put this on the agenda. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right, that's on the agenda. Kathy, where would that go? Under individual, okay, at the end. Okay.
Why don't we just do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, in case some people are waiting, Henry, why don't you go ahead? Henry, would you like to read it aloud for us?
Sure. Again, proclaiming the month of February 2019 as African American History Month in Tompkins County.
Whereas Negro History Week was first celebrated during the second week in February 1926 that encompassed the birthdays both of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. And where Negro History Week was announced by historian Carter G. Woodson and the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History. And the celebration was expanded to a month in 1976, the nation's bicentennial and 50 years after the first celebration. And whereas Tompkins County is home to an active, growing, civically engaged African-American community, and virtually every aspect of our community's life has been influenced by African-Americans, whether in arts, medicine, government, labor, business, volunteerism, now therefore it be resolved, the Tompkins County Legislature does hereby proclaim the month of February 2019 as African-American History Month in Tompkins County. Resolve further that together with the entire community, we join in celebration and recognition of the African-American community, and further be resolved that the Pan-African flag should be flown on the county's flagpoles during African-American History Month.
All right, thank you. And that's seconded again by Leslin. Any discussion? Henry, thank you very much for writing this, for bringing this to our attention, and for securing flags, as I understand it, yes, that shall be flown as soon as we vote on this. Well, not as soon as we vote on this, but pursuant to us voting on this. Anything else? All in favor, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. Thank you so very much. There's one of the flags. Thank you so much, Henry. We appreciate that. Anything else to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. Well, we'll read through the consent agenda. If you need anything pulled off, just give a shout. Resolution A, 2018 Budget Transfer, Department of Recycling and Materials Management, ID 8353. Resolution B, authorizing a public hearing on local law number A of 2019, amending the county charter, section C-3002, providing for the appointment of the director of the Tompkins County Veterans Service Agency by the Tompkins County Administrator, ID 8340. Resolution C, resolution to update the administrative policy manual, policy 11-45, whistleblower provisions and false claims act, ID 8346. Resolution D, approval of appointment to the Tompkins County Council of Governments, ID 8358. Resolution E, appointments to the Industrial Development Agency and Tompkins County Development Corporation Board of Directors, ID 8360. Resolution F, 2019 Tourism Program Budget Adjustment, ID 8362. Resolution G, Budget Adjustment Cougar Lake Blue Way Trail, ID 8363. Resolution H,
off.
Pull that off. And Deborah, as Chair of the Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, that's in your folder. You'll move that later. Okay. Thank you very much. And I have a number of appointments. To the Historical Commission, the first set of appointments. Doc, do you need me to say the terms, Kathy? Or, okay. Dr. Rich A. Richardson, George Boyer, Rod Howe, Susan Curry, John Wordis, Rosemary Tucker, Gerald Lawrence Aching. I'm going to really just apologize for all the names on this list, and I'm going to mess up. So Simon St. Laurent, somebody named Joe Mariana, and Michael Lane. To the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, Rick Manning, Laura Winter Falk, Kara Rosenberg Nichols, Connie Kahn, Scott Higgins, Douglas Levine, Todd Parlato. To the Community Mental Health Services Board, Harmony Ayers Friedlander, Paula Winner. To the Greater Ithaca Activities Center Board, Henry Granison. To the Personal Emergency Services Response Advisory Board, Dan Klein. To the Human Rights Commission, Jesse Mancilla, Amos Malone, Njoku Awa, Josephine Karsich, Mark Vesey, Ruth Yarrow, Gladys Brangman, Larry Roberts, Kirby Edmonds, Susan Bauer, Kathleen Bergen, Gloria Sanchez, Kathy Jett, Pei Soyika Arwali, and Jason Hungerford. So is there a motion for the consent agenda? Moved by Anna, seconded by Deborah. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's all unanimous. Thank you very much. All right. looking for who's going to get up and go home now. So we are ready to go to committees for the Housing and Economic Development Committee. Anna Kellis, Chair.
So we have a scheduled meeting that will be on the 4th, always, actually, the 4th Thursday of every month, and that is from 9:30 to 11:30. One of the things that we have on this agenda, and this is for all committee members, is to read the report that came out from the Planning Department that is on the focus area, focus development areas. I spoke to David West today, and that is something that he and I felt both would be a good thing to review as a starter. I'll be working with the Planning Department, specifically Megan and David, to find out what their schedule is for the year, because I really don't want to put things on their agenda above and beyond what they can handle. So I'll be working with them closely first. And we will also be talking about transportation as it relates to housing and the built environment collectively throughout the year. I'll be reaching out to all committee members to find out if there are other issues that you would like me to put on, and then we can identify the three topmost. And finally, I'll just say that Deborah, as the vice chair for this committee, she and I will be working very closely to coordinate the two committees, that's HED and PEAK, that were divided from the previous committee that I chaired, which was Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality. We intentionally coordinated those so that they aren't disparate in efforts, but coordinated, since some of the issues that we address certainly do overlap. So that is the full report.
Thank you, Anna. Any questions? I will just add a couple things as a report from the last Housing Committee meeting, which was held on January 25th. We had a great presentation by Johanna Anderson on Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services activities in 2018 and their objectives for 2019. And it was very handy that she was there, because we had a long talk about the idea of a land trust and how the county might support their efforts. This was related to the long-awaited opinion from New York State about whether we can put local money into affordable housing projects. And the answer is
maybe.
It's like, let's all shrug our shoulders. It was, and I want to follow this up with Jonathan, but it's very much sort of, well, it's not exactly illegal, but it's not exactly legal. We're not sure. So I know I'm summarizing here. It's not exactly authorized. Okay, not exactly. It's in the state constitution authorized for localities, for cities and villages, that they can put funds, local funds, into affordable housing projects. Counties are not on that list. So it's really unclear. So we did discuss if we had if we did decide to put local money into affordable housing, where would we put it? What kind of things would move the needle? We talked a lot about the Community Housing Development Fund, about trying to add resources there, and would that actually make a difference? And we really did talk. It started to feel that the land bank idea or the housing trust idea made a lot of sense, because you could permanently reduce the cost of housing and really target exactly where you are putting it if we worked with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services to do that. So I'll be talking to Jonathan about what we talked about a year ago, of going to the state for a home rule bill, a local, you know, one county authorization to put funds into affordable housing. They do this for a lot of different issues, and I think we've really done our due diligence in looking at other ways to do this, and that might be the most reliable thing to do, to just say, yeah, we're going to get state approval to say we can do this. So we had a great discussion about the implementation so far, the efforts on implementing the housing strategy,
from the Planning Department, and an introduction to the Incremental Development Alliance. Consultants who are going to be coming into the community this year to work with us on infill development, and so you'll see a lot of that coming out of the Housing and the HED committee this year. So just wanted to update you on that whole meeting's discussion. Any questions on that? All right, thank you very much. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Public Safety Committee has not met since our last legislative meeting. We will be meeting on February 21st at 3 o'clock here in chambers.
Okay. Thank you, Rich. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Hi there. I just wanted to thank Deborah, Henry, and Martha for conducting the Human Rights Commission interviews with me. I'm also thankful that we were able to figure out the 15 new commissioners for the Human Rights Commission. Also, I wanted to let everyone know that St. John's is now open and our provider for Code Blue. That's the program that offers shelter services whenever it's freezing outside. During business hours, if someone is homeless, they can go to the DSS building Monday through Friday. After business hours, they can go directly to St. John's. That's located at 618 West State Street, where the old Rescue Mission was. Or they can call 607-354-8990. I'd also like to thank Dan for running this past Friday's HHS meeting. I had a sick kid with the flu, and Dan stepped in last minute to chair his first HHS meeting. So I'd like to turn this over to Dan for an update.
Thank you. Just a couple of quick updates from staff that I thought everyone would want to hear. That St. John's, the shelter, homeless shelter, has increased the bed capacity from 12 to 19. And that there's been one church already that's been taking in people for during Code Blue, during the cold nights. There's been 12 beds in that church, and now another church has agreed to do it as well. So we just doubled our capacity for that. We also got updated on something called the Population Health Program, administered through the Human Services Coalition. And they had been receiving state money every year for the last 4 years. It's supposed to be a five-year program. So even though it's supposed to be funded for this year, it's not in the governor's budget. So I guess things like that happen a lot where they get put back in at the last minute. But as of this moment, that program is not funded for the coming year. And then the other major part of the meeting was discussion of goals and a work plan for HHS. So I just thought I'd read through the list that we came up with. One is to continue to focus and strengthen the shelter services system. One was about building a strong commission and office of human rights. That we expect to work on some of these topics: ban the box, source of income, and writing new bylaws and a job description for the director of OHR, and hiring a new director. The committee will be evaluating the role of the combined mental health and public health commissioner position this year. We talked about if there's another government shutdown, we want to make sure that we're monitoring and evaluating the situation and communicating with our citizens. The community outreach worker program, we want to keep this process moving. You may remember that we put money in contingency during our budget process, and we want to make sure that money gets released soon to expand the program. We want to do some work and some discussion on a supervised injection facility. We have work to do about marijuana laws locally if New York State passes its legislation. And then possibly separately from the Human Rights Commission, we might want to do some work on source of income legislation. So that's a big list for 1 year for one committee, and see what we can do with it.
Did the Human Services Coalition talk about creating a letter that we could then bring to our lobbying groups or Lifton or to try and push to get that back into the budget?
She did not. That's a really good idea, though, and Madam Chair, will you take care of that?
Okay. That is a long list, and I think, I mean, it's good to start with a longer list and pare it down, and I think it's important to work with staff and Jason on where the line is between, say, policy and staff work and what the staff work plans are like, and certainly that each department, you have multiple departments in HHS, actually most of the committees, all the committees have multiple departments. You don't have to have a committee goal for each department. But I think it'll be important to really be thoughtful about how we can add value to the staff's work and kind of not duplicate staff work or get in the way of staff work. So, Jason, did you want to say anything about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Part of our objective here is to work with the committees to identify priorities. What are the priorities for the year that you feel are important to work on? And then through that process, work with Amy and Lisa and I, with department heads to say, all right, where are these priorities overlapping with the work plan? And from those initial discussions about priorities, maybe able to drill down a little bit more as to what are the intended outcomes here? Are we talking about advocacy or are we talking about actual work product? So we can kind of delineate the difference between the two. Because if there's work product, we should talk about how that fits into the department's work plan. Where's the priority of it? What's the time frame for completion of it? And what's the level of involvement? So that's something we hope to work on over the next maybe 30 days as we begin to bring forward individual departmental work plans to share with each committee. So you have an understanding of what's going on their workload and how do the two overlap. So we have consistency with outcomes, consistency with expectations, and we all know what we're getting into. So that's what we hope to have in the process. I know Amy, Lisa, and I will be at committee meetings, try to facilitate more discussion about what are those interests and priorities so that we can materialize them and bring them back to the committee for consensus, saying, yep, this is what we talked about, this is our interest, or maybe we need to expand and talk a little bit more up front about what we want to do with this. So that's our goal here.
Does that make sense? Any discussion or questions about that? I did mention earlier that I wanted to set up a meeting of committee chairs and vice chairs with Jason to talk about kind of process issues, and I'll be sending something out this week looking for a date. I have a feeling that might include almost everybody around the table. But I will get dispensation from Jonathan about it being an open meeting or not. But I think as a training session, it's kind of, it can fit in that category, because I think this issue of really focusing the work of your committee, it's really different from the work of staff. I want to make sure that we're in harmony with kind of what staff is doing. So, all right. Anything else for HHS? Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. F&I has not met since the last ledge meeting. We will be meeting in East Chambers on the 21st of this month at 1 p.m. Change in time for everybody to note. Looking forward to finding out what the governor is going to do to our bridge program and whatever else he's going to get his fingers into. So catch you later.
All right. Any questions for Dave? Thanks very much. Government Operations, Mike Lane, Chair.
The February meeting is going to happen on Thursday, the 7th. At 1:30, it'll be in the old jail. The January meeting was chaired by Dan Klein. I'd like to defer to him for the report.
A lot of deferring going on to me tonight. thanks, Mike. Just a couple of things that we covered. One, this is Mike's idea. We had our poet laureate introduced at our last legislature meeting, and Mike suggested we put up a plaque somewhere in the room, a small plaque that has the names of the past poet laureates in every 2 years. Engrave a new one. So I think we all agreed on that. We had a discussion about the travel and training money for legislators, and in the end, we didn't take any action. Which basically means it'll go on as it is unless somebody comes forward with a more specific proposal or idea of how to allocate it. And then the other thing we passed, resolution to skip the July 2nd legislature meeting. And we didn't bring it forward as a resolution. It hasn't reached the legislature yet. We wanted to get some input from staff and from department heads particularly. So that is in the works, and if there's, you know, information that we should know in helping us make that decision, please make sure I know or Mike knows or somebody knows. That is it. That's the report.
Thank you, Dan.
That resolution was not passed unanimously.
That's correct. It was 4-1, Mike Lane against.
So I will just ask department heads who are here. Jason,
yeah.
Has there been discussion about July 2nd?
The only feedback I got, Rick and I exchanged a little bit. You know, he usually gives an audit report at that meeting, although I don't think it was critical. It could be done at a later meeting, but outside of that, was the only feedback I got.
That and the auction resolution from our June auction is usually passed at that meeting, and we hate for the new property owners not to gain deeds to their properties. But we could, I mean, both of those things could be moved to the second meeting in July. It's just more of a hardship for the auction property owner.
And that has to happen at the end of June, so right? Can't do it early, can't do that a little earlier?
The auction's pretty well set in the whole foreclosure process. That auction meeting is always in mid-June, around the 16th of June, and we usually try to make sure that everything takes place in the 3 weeks after that as far as collecting payments from those who bought the properties and starting on the legal paperwork. That first meeting in July puts us right inside the 30-day window. But, again, it's your choice. It's the legislature's choice as to when you want to adopt that resolution. There's nothing set in stone.
I think we'd appreciate, you know, more feedback from the department heads in case there's anything else that comes up.
I did ask. I will ask again at the department meeting next week.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, this time, like, it's Tuesday, July 2nd. It's, like, right, the holiday is right in the middle of the week. It doesn't usually fall that way. All right. Thank you very much for GO. Planning, Energy, Environmental Quality Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Okay, well, before we talk about planning, energy, and environmental quality, I think we should take care of this resolution from planning, development, and environmental quality. So I would like to move Resolution H, urging United States Congress to pass the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, H.R. 763 and S3791, ID number 8365.
Second by Anna. All right.
I would like to propose amending and substituting, just substituting for the resolution in the red folder that everybody has.
Okay. Is there a second on that? Or if that's
friendly?
Friendly, you're moving, you've seconded and
friendly
you're moving.
Friendly to me.
Is it friendly to me, too?
Okay. All right. So pull out your folders. Yeah, the
I can highlight
that's in your red folder.
I can highlight the quick changes for everybody. Mm-hmm. The Senate bill, that one has died and has not been reintroduced, so we removed that from the title. In the seventh, whereas the full name of the act was included, you'll see the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act has been introduced in Congress and would establish a steadily increasing fee on fossil fuels at the point of their entry into the economy, and then such a fee would. So that was added. And the full whereas underneath that says, whereas the act would return all revenues, minus 3% for administration, to each American as a monthly dividend to offset expected higher prices for goods and services. This was actually an addition from Martha. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I think it is valuable to highlight and give details about what the dividend is, because this is really the component that made this possible to get bipartisan support for this bill at the federal level. So there is a significant amount of bipartisan support. The organization behind this, Citizen Climate Action
Lobby.
Thank you. CCL, Citizen Climate Lobby. They have been working on this for about a decade, and they understand the long game. and have been working to garner support. They're okay, even if this doesn't go through this year. They will continue to work. Hopefully we will continue to reintroduce this. I will note that this was one that we introduced 2 years ago, and it didn't go through at that time. They're continuing to gather increasing bipartisan support at the federal level, and have asked for it to be resubmitted again or reintroduced. So we'll just continue to work on this until it's recognized as a legitimate solution.
Thanks, Anna. Mike Sigler.
My question is just touching on what you just said. It went through here 2 years ago, though, right? Like, we passed it, and then it didn't go. Okay.
Correct.
I was reading it. I'm like, this seems really familiar.
Yep. Yeah. Clearly, you've been doing your homework.
Yeah, and I brought this up at the Climate Resiliency Committee at NYSAC, and the chair of the committee hadn't heard of it, but was interested in it. So he said, let's, you know,
bring it back.
Send them information. So once we pass this, I will send that on to them so that NYSAC can take a look at it.
So there's one last piece then that will help. There's a 3-page summary of the bill so that people can read it quick and down and dirty. So I'll give this to Kathy if you want to copy it and give it to everyone so you don't have to read the full bill. It is quite interesting. If this topic interests you, I encourage you to read the full bill. It's not that long. It's like only 6 pages, which is amazing for a federal bill, so at least the initial introduction. But I will give this to you, Kathy.
And with that, I would ask that we add NYSAC to the last resolve that of places we send it to. Assume that's friendly?
That is friendly.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor of these changes? All in favor? Any opposed? That's delightfully unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Great. Anything else? And then, Peak, did you have any other?
Well, Peak hasn't met yet. It will meet on February 25th at 1:30. It will always meet on the fourth Monday. I've already sent out an email to all the members soliciting your input as to what issues you would like to focus on. We will be discussing that at our first meeting, and Katie has graciously agreed to provide us with a piece of her work plan that directly relates to our work so that we can pick our goals and plan our agenda with planning and sustainability staff's schedule in mind. All I can say is that it's my hope that this year we will focus on water issues, energy issues, and give agriculture and farming and soil and water a seat at the table and pay more attention to what those people do. Thank you. Oh, and if you're on the committee, please get back to me with your preferences. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Any questions for Deborah? All right. Thank you very much. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
We have not met. We will meet again on February 15th at 9 a.m. at the old jail. Be ready with your goals, and we will discuss that and along with our regular business.
Questions for Mike? Thanks very much. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. We did meet at in December, and you didn't get a report from me, I don't believe. What did we talk about? Lots of good stuff. Or did I give a report?
You met in January.
Oh, good Lord.
Right.
Yes, January 23rd. Somebody help me.
Yeah, it's already February. I know. It's like,
somebody help me. It can't be February already.
Memorable meeting.
That's what happens when you put me at the end of the agenda. I don't remember what happened.
We talked about Jason actually gave us a really wonderful summary about populations.
All right. I think I got it.
It was the memo that I forgot to send out.
So Stephen Estes, our former deputy commissioner, along with administration, did a fantastic job of sharing with us a population study around the different classes of people as required by EEO, and what is our availability for folks who are available for hire, so to speak, who are work eligible. One of the interesting things we got was sort of a breakdown of who works in our county and where do they live. I found that very interesting. But 68% of our 668 employees live in Tompkins County. There were 15 other counties, I believe. Yeah, 15 other counties from which our employees come. Yes, some of them I'd never even heard about, these counties.
Are they in Pennsylvania?
So they're all over. So there was Bradford County. There was Jefferson County, I believe.
I think there was one from Schenectady County.
Yeah, so it was quite interesting. Not large numbers. The next largest number came from Tioga County, and that was about 9% of our employees. So it was interesting to sort of see that and get that breakdown also, as I said, of who lives in our county and how many of those folks are available and work eligible. And then we had some raw numbers to go with it as a good example, because I'm African American, I focus on that. So over 668 employees who we have eligible and I think working for us, no, or eligible, we're 23. I can't remember the numbers. I had it up on my phone and now it's disappeared. Employees eligible to work or who work for us. Let me see if I can read it off for you. It was a very interesting discussion. So the county's workforce in 2017, as of 1/1/2017, 666 employees were white, 24 were African American, Native American, those who identify as such, were 6, and they go down the line. So we had 711 employees total. And fast forward to 1/9/2019, of 722 employees, we had 23 who identified as African American, 2 as Native, et cetera, et cetera. So they're interesting numbers for us to look at and see where we can make some improvements. So we also talked a little bit about our goals for the year and what we hope to achieve. We have 3 main goals, and then we had some tasks that we were continuing. So one of our goals is to complete and adopt a diversity and inclusion plan. We have our policy. We want to have a plan. Like, what do we do? How do we put the policy into action? We want implementation and recommendation of the actions that came out of the climate survey. We can move that forward. And we want to revisit something we were looking at for many years, and that is the Diversity and Inclusion Award. This legislature gave out one such award, and we want to work on making that process solidified and something that is institutionalized. Some of our other suggested items that we're working on throughout this year would be continuation of the reading and discussion program, making sure that we have a good, robust group of employees who are willing to work on it. So we have one in the spring and one in the fall. It is a well-received program, and we want to continue it. Continue our diversity and inclusion discussion related to agencies and entities that get funding from us, and how are they doing relative to diversity and inclusion? Are they mirroring what we say is our policy? How can we help them to get to that place? Another one of the things we've been working on, review the county's commitment to compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Several years ago, I saw a route somewhere, we had an audit. We had done an audit, and we want to sort of review that, see where we are, what improvements have been made, et cetera. Continue the discussion on how committee can support the work of Human Resources Department and how to understand better the processes they have in place So recruitment and retention, we have a talent acquisition and a retention position. How is that position working? How can we help support and continue to support the subgroup on LGBTQ plus interactions with law enforcement, moving towards having a policy that we can adopt here in the county? So there was discussion on all of those things at our committee meeting, and we will continue to meet on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 3:30. We meet in the old jail. It's also very convenient for personnel and administration until such time as we can't meet there anymore. I saw the email, but that's where we will be meeting. There were some announcements that came out of that. I know Annie wanted to add one, and if any other committee members or Jason wanted to add something else that we talked about, most certainly can.
Thank you, Leslyn. Any additions or questions? Annie?
One addition I'd like to add, as far as Dr. Kenneth Clark is organizing a program on combating a climate of hate, and that's February 28th, 7 p.m. to 8:30 at the Borg Warner Room at the library, and everybody's invited to come. Dr. Clark, did you want to say anything else about that? I'll be speaking at it, so thank you for asking me.
Go to a microphone. Thank you, Ken.
Usually I don't need one, but thank you. The program scheduled for the 28th of February is going to be focused on six areas. We're going to be looking at racism, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, political violence, and the sixth one is escaping me for now, but we will be basically having 10-minute discussions by each panelist of each of these areas, and that will be followed by a question and answer session. We are closing in on confirming the last two of the participants. We've got four confirmed, two to go. And so this is, I think, a very important public offering because of the way in which these six injustices impact and implicate violations of human, civil, and constitutional rights. And I think it's important to have this public discussion in light of the current political, social, and cultural climate in the United States and, by extension, the globe. And so we are very much looking forward to this conversation, and which can also be a prompt to take action to address these issues. I think it will be an important contribution to the larger public discourse and action around these issues. And we're going to cast a broad net in terms of publicity and promotion. I will be working with Marsha in this regard and tapping into a number of listservs community-wide as well as on the campuses to get word out and also to get publicity into a number of locales in town in order to generate a good audience.
Thank you. That's great to know about, and I'm glad you're doing that. Might the sixth area be misogyny or violence against women?
I will tell you.
Did you?
I didn't hear it.
I don't think you mentioned homophobia.
Okay.
We're not addressing at this time the misogyny piece or the issues related to the Me Too movement at this time. Part of it was just simply, just compression of time. And usually in relation to the fact that, we've got a large sort of panel discussion currently. That's not to say that that issue is not important, but that is something that we do want to address down the road because of what really animated this discussion initially were a series of incidents that took place over this past fall, which would have included, of course, the sending 14 packages to a variety of U.S. political officials, including two former presidents, the killings at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, and a number of other issues that took place in the fall and into the early part of this year. So at this juncture, we made a selection of a certain amount of issues, knowing we weren't going to be able to cover all of the broad spectrum of issues. But at the same time, we wanted to begin a public discussion about these areas and not to prioritize those over against others, but to be able to begin a discussion and to also provide an opportunity to use this as a launching pad for other discussions about pertinent issues such as sexism and the Me Too movement as a response to sexism, as well as the intersectionality of sexism and gender expression, race, and so forth.
Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Anything, Leslin?
So I do want to take this moment and recognize that in our community there are some amazingly brilliant and talented, as Black History Month, so bear with me, and talented and brave African Americans, and Dr. Clark is one of them. And I remember in talking about wanting to do something with everything that had been going on, and especially following the killing, the murders at the synagogue. And so I really want to commend you and whoever else has been working with you on pulling this together.
Well, thank you.
Because we cannot just let things, we can't just talk about it, have a moment of silence, and let things go by anymore. The time has passed for that. We have to keep the dialogue alive and keep the action alive. So thank you very, very much.
Yes, certainly.
On that note, I also want to reiterate something that Henry said. I, through Dr. Clark at Cornell when he was at a director at
Cornell United
Cornell
Religious
United
Work.
Religious Work, so if you remember the name, was responsible for the Cornell's Dr. Martin Luther King commemoration lecture series. This is the committee, I'm part of that committee, that's responsible for bringing Bree Newsom here to the community and to Cornell for that commemorative lecture. And so I want to reiterate and encourage all of you and those who are watching to please, if you can, it's free and open to the public, 7 p.m., Sage Hall, February 11th, that's next Monday. So thank you for your work on that as well over the years, Dr. Clark, and it is continuing.
Thank you.
I want to keep activists like this coming to our community and sharing what they have done so we know that we too can be taking action.
One more thing I will say is that Ann Coleman will be one of our panelists. She has agreed to address issues related to homophobia. So I could not leave the chamber tonight without mentioning her.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Clark. Anna?
I one question for Dr. Clark and then just two quick comments. Is it going to be a roundtable or a panel presentation?
Panel presentations of about 10 minutes apiece, which would take us to about approximately 60 minutes, and then we open it up for questions and answers. Plan to end at approximately between 8:30, 8:45 at the max.
Great, thank you. And one other thing, the same day on the 11th, people should make a whole day of it. I think that event would be great. And there's also an event at the Statler Auditorium called Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People, that I think would be a really valuable, and I thought it would be good to bring up. It seems to be fitting to this.
The 11th at what time?
It's the 11th at 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the Statler Auditorium, Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People.
Great.
And, yeah, I think that a great thing for everybody to go to. And one last thing that we did discuss this last WDIC that I thought was very valuable. There's a book read that that the WDIC supports, and it is a series of four. and reading and discussion, but what we had this time was a very extensive report out from participants on the experience that they had, some that were amazingly good, some that were, you know, not so good, but very constructive, and, you know, prioritizing the need to make sure that everybody feels safe to have a constructive conversation. But something I think that everybody should consider trying to do at some point. I have yet to be able to fit all four of them in my schedule. The idea is that you can attend all four of them in order to participate. So,
Deborah.
On a much more pedestrian note, Lesland's reference to Tioga County reminded me, in case anyone missed it, Tioga County has identified several cases of whooping cough. So if you are in Tioga County, or you know somebody coming from Tioga County or whatever, just be extra careful, because whooping cough is really nasty and very contagious.
Okay. All right. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Dr. Clark. We have the minutes of the previous meeting. That is January 15th. It's on packet page 22 of your packet. Moved by Henry, second by Annie. Discussion. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? All right. That's unanimous. We've just run through the usual recess that we take at 7:30. Sorry, Jim. But I thought we should just finish up, and then I would like to ask for an executive session to discuss real estate negotiations. As I said before, I don't expect to take any action after executive session. Is there a motion for executive session? Moved by Shauna, seconded by Dave. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. We will break down, pause for 10 minutes and take a break, and Jim will close the cameras and go on to have a happy birthday evening. Thank you, Jim.